It's time for another episode of the Hell Money Podcast.
Yes.
And today we are discussing democracy.
We're debating democracy.
Well, you know, I mean, does it have to be a debate? Maybe just a friendly little fireside.
Maybe both sides are exactly the same, and so democracy is irrelevant.
Who knows?
Who knows? You
know? Yeah.
We'll find out.
But yeah, a little fireside chat here.
It's our last episode of the year. Hmm.
Yeah, and we started sort of near the beginning of the year. Did we start in like March or something?
No, we started in like May.
Okay, never mind. We started midway through the year.
Yeah.
So yeah, but it's been half a year of the pod, mm-hmm. mostly keeping to a schedule of once every week.
We've been very diligent with our creative process. Diligent.
Yeah.
And it's all culminating in this.
let's not get ourselves out on a limb here, okay?
But I mean, we've been talking about discussing democracy for a while.
It's something that comes up a lot.
We did fiat last week.
Yeah.
We've done capitalism. Mm-hmm. Yep. Democracy is, yeah, I don't know. Democracy is might be the most controversial one to debate of those three.
I think so.
No?
I think yeah. so. Yeah, because like I think a lot of people have very strong positive feelings about democracy.
Yeah.
And they think like, well, like what's the alternative to democracy? Like fascism? Mm-hmm.
That's going to be me today.
Yeah, right. That's, you're going to be hammering me with that mm-hmm. the whole time.
I'm going to go real libtarded.
Yeah. But I'm generally, I don't know if I'd say that I'm anti-democracy. I guess I'd say that I'm anti-democracy.
Damn.
Yeah, I think democracy is pretty bad. And I don't want to say that I have like a strong alternative to democracy, but I think one of the reasons that democracy is bad is because people like it so much.
Like people just believe in it.
People believe in it, and that increases the scope of where they want to apply democracy.
Sure.
Right? And I think it's just an inappropriate tool for a lot of jobs. And if you think it's the right tool for a lot of jobs, then you get, you know.
Well, democracy is definitely like what we've built our whole kind of like moral political system on.
Absolutely.
Is like spreading democracy.
Right.
If you have elections and mm-hmm. they are fair elections,
yep.
you're good to go. Everything's set.
Yep. And democracy is basically used as a synonym for good.
Yeah.
When people say a democratic decision, a democratic process, a democratic this, democratic that, it's a content-free statement. Mm-hmm. They're just saying like the good thing.
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to the bad thing.
Yeah, like democratic is synonymous with right. good.
Yep.
But I kind of think it is.
Yeah, well, you're totally wrong.
Do you want to give like an opening statement?
I mean, I think I mostly gave my opening statement, but I guess I would say that I think that democracy is not, you know, what is democracy? Like, well, democracy is a way of, what do we use democracy for? We use democracy as a way of making decisions about what to do. It's mm-hmm. a decision-making process. And the decisions that democracy makes, for a lot of reasons, are not particularly good. Voters are ignorant. It's one person, one vote. So if something negatively affects somebody a lot, but positively affects more people a little bit, or they just sort of have an emotional feeling about it, the majority might wind up totally screwing over the minority. Mm-hmm. The voters being ignorant thing that can't be overstated enough. Like making good decisions is hard, mm-hmm. and if there's no reason for you to do the work to make good decisions, you won't. And so as a result, you know, the average voter, they don't have any influence on the outcome of democracy, the outcome of a democratic process. Right? They just cast one vote; it has no effect. If I voted my whole life one way and I voted my whole life the other way, it would be impossible for me to tell the difference between the two worlds. And so as a result, people vote in a way that makes them feel good. They vote along tribal lines. They vote according to their gut reaction to an issue. And this just winds up making very bad decisions. The world would be better if, you know, these decisions were made differently. So democracy as a decision-making mechanism is very bad. And we use it a lot. We use it for many, 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 many things, right? Like we use it for, well, mostly for politics. And we expand the scope of the political in part because we think that democracy is good. We think, okay, well, you know, we could make decisions in this area of the economy or this area of people's personal lives using democracy. And it's good to do that because democracy is good mm-hmm. and it's inherently fair. And my argument is simply that democracy is very bad at making decisions for all the reasons that I gave. and that we simply want to lessen the scope of where we use democracy. That, you know, we think, okay, like, why don't we regulate Bitcoin? Bitcoin's a great example, mm-hmm. right? And people think it's, even though Bitcoin is something that people can do at home, they can make Bitcoin transactions with like a computer, they can, you know, between other people, sort of peer-to-peer, and people who don't want to use Bitcoin don't have to, nobody's forcing them to. I think in part because people think that democracy is a good and fair process, and that because it's a good and fair process and makes good decisions, we should make all our decisions with democracy. They think, okay, we should subject usage of Bitcoin to the democratic decision-making process. And then we get things like crazy regulations about what people are allowed to do in the privacy of their own homes with nobody watching, because we believe in the scope of democracy. So we should scale down the scope of democracy. And I think if people didn't have such a high opinion of democracy, that would naturally happen. People would be like, okay, it's pretty dysfunctional. Maybe we'll only use it where we have to, and we'll just kind of let things ride where democracy is not appropriate to use.
That was a really good monologue.
Thank you. Thank you.
You did a great job.
Unfortunately, I think I've just completely blown my wad for the entire episode. I believe I hit every single point that I wanted to hit.
I have, because, okay, I mean, I'm sort of playing the pro-democracy role here, right? Uh-huh. Like, I mean, you went in pretty anti-democracy there. I actually wasn't expecting you to be so anti-democracy. I was expecting a little bit more of a democracy is bad, but maybe other forms of government are worse. And so just government's the problem. But if we're going to have government, then maybe democracy. That's kind of how I feel, is like, it's kind of the same argument that I feel like you have against anti-capitalists, which is like, okay, you might see these negative effects of capitalism, mm-hmm. but assuming that you need a way of running an economy, mm-hmm. like, what's the alternative that actually provides better outcomes? I kind of feel the same way, assuming that you need a government, right? Then what is the better? And I wouldn't argue for like a pure direct democracy, kind of like mm-hmm. Anarchist, like everyone mm-hmm. must vote on everything and everyone must agree on everything. I don't think it's inefficient mm-hmm. to me. And I think people are ignorant and they shouldn't have to know all of the ins and outs of like, you shouldn't have to have like an incredibly politically educated population in order to have a functional society. Mm-hmm. But I think a representative democracy is the best solution. Mm-hmm. And part of that is like that I think when you have the force of like a leader to make a decision and to sort of like set out a vision that people kind of vote for one or the other on, like mm-hmm. I do think people kind of have an instinctual something that makes them vote in a way that is like actually energetically aligned. I know you're gonna argue
really?
Against that.
Really? You think that people vote you think they make good decisions?
I don't know that I would say they make good decisions, but I kind of like understand why they make decisions the way that they do, and I don't.
That's very
fault
different.
Them.
Okay, like not blaming somebody is very different. Like I don't blame voters for voting in terrible ways.
Like, I think that Trump was the right decision for a large portion of Americans on what he campaigned on originally in 2016. Mm-hmm. I think that what Trump was like campaigning on was there's so many parallels between that and like the Bernie campaign. Mm-hmm. And I think both of those campaigns are like examples of, it's just that like the Democrats, I think, whatever, they edged Bernie out, whatever. But I think like Trump winning that nomination in 2016. Like, that's an example of, like, the voters' instincts towards, like, Orange Man
were
actually kind of correct, you know? And, like, I do think, like, you have to have popular approval in mm-hmm. a society for a government. Like, I don't think it's ideal to have a government that isn't beholden to people's opinions, like, citizens' opinions. So how else do you do, like, you know, how else do you give a shit about what people want unless you have people vote on it? What's the alternative? That's basically my argument. What's the alternative? Yeah.
I mean, I think probably we're actually fairly aligned in that. I think that the obvious alternatives to democracy are probably, a lot of them are much worse, right? Like, I'm not a fan of fascism. I hate authoritarian governments. I think that a democracy is probably way better than authoritarian governments. But so really, it's about I actually think it is very similar to your argument, which I'm like, okay, if the best form of government that we can think of is democracy, then this means that government is very bad. Government is like not very good. And so we want to do as little government as possible.
I mean, that's what I assumed your opinion would be.
Yeah, that is my opinion. Yeah. But I also think that democracy is very bad. Like, I think it
is. As opposed to like markets?
As opposed to, well, as a decision-making mechanism. I don't want to cast it as, democracy versus other forms of government, because that's already, I've already like lost the debate at that point, right? I'm not saying democracy, other forms of government. I'm saying that we shouldn't use government to make a lot of the decisions that we use to make, that we use to make decisions. Wait.
Yeah, yeah.
So like when you did your makeup this morning, like, did anybody get a vote on how you did your makeup?
Well, I mean, in some like large scale way. About,
no,
like,
I mean, no, I mean, no, not in some weird metaphorical
beauty
way about
standards in our society.
No. I mean, like, you woke up and you made decisions, and those decisions were yours. And,
unfortunately, yes.
And nobody.
And this is how I've ended up.
And nobody subjected those. None of those things were up for a vote.
Well, yeah, I mean, your makeup wasn't up for a vote because I forced you to.
Yeah. But no. I mean, like, none of those things, none of those choices you made were up for a vote.
I mean, right? I guess what you're saying is that deciding what you want or what people want in a society is not best done by voting.
But I'm saying, like, well, if democracy is good, why not put it up for a vote?
I'm not saying democracy is good.
No, but
you're arguing against the democracy good crowd.
I'm arguing against the where do we apply government?
Sure.
Right? What is the scope of government?
Sure.
Right? So I think if we put up, you know, when you woke up, how much sugar you put in your coffee, how you did your makeup up for a vote, it would be terrible. Mm-hmm. Voters would make moronic decisions. People would be lobbying. We'd come out with suboptimal outcomes, right?
Right.
And so when I say, oh, democracy is bad, and the counter is like, well, what's the alternative? It's obviously like just not moving things out of the scope of government. And that's not radical, right? Because many things are outside of the scope of government. We don't even think about subjecting, you know, where you go to eat dinner, which restaurant you eat dinner. We don't even think about subjecting that to a vote. So it's not like a radical, weird proposition. It's like, well, we have all these decisions that we make in society, and many of them are made via government, and many of them are made not via government. And if, like, the government makes decisions that are terrible, we should, and the best government that we can come up with still makes terrible decisions, then that means that some amount of things should be moved from one pile to the other.
I'm about to sound like a real democracy colonial imperialist American here, but like, let's say that you have a country that's very politically volatile, and if you just decide like dissolve the government, you're just gonna get like
chaos violence
yeah. And eventually you're just gonna get a military dictatorship.
Sure. Yeah.
Is not like, if that's the case, shouldn't you try to have a democracy?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is like the moral. I feel like this is how people justify like American imperialism in their head, is they're like, well, if these are the situations, then what are you going to do? And like,
okay, so here,
you know, so it's like, I this like utopia where we don't need to like a government. Sure. But like,
no, but it's not some utopia. As I said, many of our decisions day to day are not subject to democracy, right? We have a bunch of decisions that are made via government, and in places where the government is democratic, those decisions are made democratically, and a whole bunch of decisions that are made not via the government. What's so utopian and radical of being like, some of these decisions we should move from this pile to that pile?
I mean, I think I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Like, but for the things that we need a government for.
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah.
Should it be democracy?
I actually have a lot of ideas about how we could do government better, but I actually think that those are pretty meaningless because I have no idea about how to get those things instated, right? I can certainly imagine forms of government that are better and better ways of making decisions, but I don't think anybody would go for them.
But what, like, give me one. I'm curious. I can't think of anything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that people should be able to sell their vote, like, just directly. I think that would make democracy more efficient. I think instead of lobbying, I think people would just get paid for their vote. And then I think people would just, like, directly benefit from selling their vote, and they'd have to think about a little bit more, like, oh shit, maybe I can get 20-30 bucks for this. Like, I'm gonna, you know, think about how I want to sell this and who I want to sell it to. I think that people would, like, what are other things?
Mr. Beast 2040.
Yeah, that's, Mr. Beast 2040. Yeah,
that's just buy. Literally what I mean, for I've been going off about Mr. Beast nonstop to anyone who will hear about it, but I don't know that I've gone off about him on the podcast. But he has said that he's a very popular YouTuber, but I feel like people who listen to our podcast might not know him because he's like a Gen Z.
No, everybody knows Mr. Beast, right?
Really?
Yeah, YouTuber. For those who don't know, who have been living under in a broom closet for the last 30 years, he's a YouTuber who gives away tons of money, and he just goes on things. He's like, I walked around Chicago giving people $1,000 to like eat a roast beef sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah. Just increasing levels of extravagance and giving away money. And he like is the actual Sam Bankman-Fried, like living in a 2-bedroom apartment that he rents and like has no worldly possessions.
Right.
Like is not like enjoying the fruits of his wealth, but rather just like totally reinvesting it back into the video making.
Oh, I think he is enjoying the fruits of his wealth in the sense that I think he loves doing,
cool doing
what he does.
He's doing
and
cool
so
things.
By reinvesting money into what he loves, he gets to do more cool
sure.
things.
He doesn't own like expensive material possessions.
Yep.
But he said recently on a podcast that I listened to that after he's done with YouTube, which he's expecting will be like 10 or so years from now, that he can like remain on top. But after like he's starting to kind of realize like my time is up, whatever, he wants to do a video where he gives away the most amount of money to the most number of Americans possible and then announce his campaign for president.
Yeah. I think it's brilliant.
It's, it's genius. Unfortunately, he's not going to be able to run legally until 2040 because he's only 23 or 24 right now.
That's crazy. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, what you just described, that's Mr. Beast's America.
Yeah. I mean, mostly it comes down to I don't actually really care about the form of government. I do care a lot about the form of government. I think that there are different forms that are probably better. I think that the fewer things that are left up to markets and people's individual decisions, the better things will be. But I don't actually think that advocating for that is very interesting, right? Like, libertarians have been advocating that for, you know, 40 years, and they haven't gotten very far at all.
Well, it's pretty hard to criticize from outside the club, you know, like if you can't even get into the club.
No,
you can't. Like,
I don't think it has to do with that. I think it has to do with the fact that people think that the system is fair and it makes them feel good and they don't think critically about anything. And so the libertarians are making like an intellectual argument and like the libertarians are making any argument, which is like, hey, we should do this thing and everybody would be better off. But, there are people who benefit from the current system and, you know, nobody's really thinking rationally. The current system will like persist.
Well, democracy is the fairest option of the government options, I think.
That's right.
Technically.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. But again, like,
how do you...
it's like if you're like choosing between the black shirts and the brown shirts, like you've lost, right?
But
if you're like,
is,
do you want Mussolini or Hitler?
This is why I'm saying it's hard to criticize from outside the club, because it's like if you're really living that like libertarian life, you're probably not trying to run for office or like
not.
Accrue political
absolutely
power.
Not. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's just like it's just a difficult. Like the libertarians will never really truly take power.
Absolutely. So I mean, the only thing that I think is worth advocating for and thinking about is ways to increase the constraints, the incentives and constraints on governments. That the main reason that governments are bad, whatever the form of government, is that they're unconstrained. They can just sort of do whatever they want. There's no consequences. And they don't have any competition, right? You don't have any...
I also, though, this is sort of like fucking over my argument about democracy good, but I also think that like some of the best things that government has done has been in like a like undemocratic way, because it's very efficient to rule as like a dictatorship or a monarchy.
Yep, absolutely.
So it's like, hard. I don't know. I mean, you obviously would not be someone that's like into the New Deal, but let's say you like the idea of a new deal.
Okay.
How else do you have a New Deal if not for like an essentially monarch president like right. FDR?
Yeah. But also like authoritarians doing things is probably on net like a negative. Like maybe we get the New Deal every once in a while, which I'm not convinced is all at all was a good idea. I just don't know enough about it. But we also get, you know, the most brutal pogroms in history. We get, you know, massive just like economic cucking that like immiserates everybody. So yeah, there's downsides to the authoritarian efficiency as well. But wait, let me finish my competitive, my government competition thing, because this is like the only thing that I like have to say that I think is interesting.
It's all he's got.
All I think about, which is like, so, you know, think about restaurants. Think about local restaurants. We both live in the East Bay, in the San Francisco Bay Area. In California, in the United States, in North America, in the Northern Hemisphere, on planet Earth,
supposedly,
in the solar system, and lots and lots of things here are pretty messed up. Roads are messed up, homelessness is messed up, housing prices are messed up, politics is absolutely dysfunctional. But one thing that seems to work extremely well is the quality of restaurants.
It's true.
There's a dizzying array of restaurants. You can get anything you want, and you can kind of spend as much money as you want and get a meal that's like about as good as you could imagine for that price point. You know, you can go eat really shitty fast food for very cheap, and it's not very good, but it's very cheap, and it'd be really hard to make a meal that was better for that low amount of money. You can pay a little bit more and get like In-N-Out, which is like the platonic ideal of fast food at $3.50 a burger. You can go to all sorts, dizzying array of different ethnic restaurants, and they're all priced really reasonably. They all have great food. They're priced really reasonably. And when you want to go like up the payment scale, you want to pay like $300 for dinner. You can get insane, you know, meals that are lovingly prepared, you know, with ingredients that were farmed by like equatorial, you know, nomads that are like lovingly prepared by chefs that are covered in tattoos and they're super hip and they've got five.
They've got YouTube
names.
Channels. Yeah.
They've got YouTube channels, like amazing. So restaurants are not at all democratic. They are fascist dictatorships. The owner decides what is on the menu, what it costs, and that's it. You have no say about what is on the menu at a restaurant. Zero. Like zero. I cannot think of a less democratic place. They'll even say like reasonable substitutions that you want to make. They'll say no. They'll say take it or leave it. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's what you as a consumer do. You have zero choice about what is on the menu, but you have absolute choice about where you go to eat. Right? And neither of these processes, the restaurant deciding the menu, nor you deciding where you want to go out to eat, are democratic. They are not at all. But the equilibrium that they produce is excellent, right? In the equilibrium, the arrangement that emerges is that restaurants, the owners of restaurants will try very hard to make good food at reasonable prices. And if they don't, they'll go out of businesses. And consumers naturally seek out the best restaurants. And not only will they seek them out, they'll also tell everybody about them. They'll say, oh, I went to this great place. It was awesome, right? And so the good restaurants will thrive. And there was absolutely no democracy at all. And I think that the reason that this very pleasant equilibrium where we can go out and eat delicious food occurs is because there's a great deal of competition. There's competition between the restaurant owners, and there's free choice among the people who which restaurants they choose to go to. And so I don't know how to get there, but I think that the environment out of which we would get the best governments that made the best decisions is if they existed in a world that was more like, you know, restaurants in the Bay Area, where people who are subject to the choices that governments make have as much ability as possible to leave, to not be bound by those decisions, essentially, and to change governments. I think, you know, I think states' rights doesn't go far enough. I'd really like to have counties' rights. Mm-hmm. I think if every county was fully autonomous And obviously this is a dream scenario. Maybe one county would take over another and we'd get like all this messed up stuff. But if counties were really able to decide 100% how much taxes that they wanted to collect, what policies that they wanted to have in that county, I think that, and the, you know, and obviously if every county in the United States was different, was under different government, but if the people were able to leave freely, they could just go to a different county, then governments in those counties would have to make good decisions. They simply could not make bad decisions, or everybody would leave that county, or only the people who like were like the least able to leave would leave that county. And so subject to those constraints, they would start having to make good decisions.
I mean, the difference between Emeryville and Oakland, for example, is striking.
It's striking, but it doesn't go far enough. because if I live in Emeryville or Oakland, Emeryville is way, way, way better managed in almost every conceivable way. So, you know, Emeryville is a very tiny town in the Bay Area. The Bay Area, it's across the bridge from San Francisco, and it's sort of nestled between Oakland and Berkeley. I think Berkeley has like 200,000 people and Oakland has like 450,000 people.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Emeryville has, I think, 12,000.
Yeah.
And it's better run in every single conceivable way. It has less crime. The streets are cleaner. There's less homelessness. There's more building of new housing. If you talk to small business owners in Emeryville, you say, hey, like, how is it interacting with the Emeryville government? They go, it's fantastic. They leave me alone. They take like, you know, 0.1% of my gross receipts every year as taxes. They mostly just let me do what I want. It's fabulous.
Why do you think I get bad vibes from Emeryville then?
Because you're wrong. Well, I don't know.
Can
I mean,
you articulate why I'm wrong? Like, besides, not like, because
well,
the thing
tell
is,
me what are the bad vibes you don't like about Emeryville?
Emeryville is just like full of like department stores. Like, I feel like you drive around Emeryville and it's just like,
no, it's not.
All of the box stores are in Emeryville compared
to like
everywhere else.
You're talking about a very small area that's right across the
bridge. Yeah, but Emeryville's pretty small.
Yeah, but you're talking.
I mean, the reason why those stores are in Emeryville is like because it's advantageous for them to be in Emeryville.
But like, okay, once we're done filming this episode, let's go outside. Let's take a walk down.
See, now you're doxing yourself.
Well, yeah. But yeah, very doxed. Very doxed. But let's take a walk, and we'll walk through some mixed use neighborhoods, are lovely. Like, the reason you don't like Emeryville is because you're focusing on one very small part of Emeryville.
I am, but like. Why? What do you think is like going on?
What about
in me psychologically?
Oh,
like when people see like the, because I bring this up to you all the time.
I literally think that it's like, I mean, there's the places that are in Emeryville that I really like are these like tiny streets. They have like tiny like little industrial places, like little like there's like furniture makers and there's like artisans mixed with like nice residential housing, mixed with like cute little cafes, mixed with like giant.
I think it's the gentrification feel of it.
It's not. Well, then you don't like nice things.
I know. I'm dissecting like.
But I mean, like,
because I think like,
is the alternative like Oakland? Like, Oakland is wretched.
Yeah.
Is the alternative Berkeley, where like you can't build like a?
Yeah, Berkeley's like NIMBY.
Yeah.
Like very. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The thing is that
this is such a niche argument too. Yeah. Like, no one who's outside of the Bay Area is going to,
I think I understand it.
Maybe we should reroute, but like,
one time, like, for example, we were driving around and you asked me, there was a new development and it was like I think it was in Berkeley, and it was not an attractive building.
It's the classic gentrification looking, like, I know I'm like simplifying with that, but like, I think people know what I mean. Like, where it's like the plastic siding and like the pieces
are all
different.
I actually don't
think
that there's that much of that in Emeryville.
Maybe. I think Emeryville is more like warehouse, like turned into lofts,
which
also has a gentrifying feel to it. And I'm not defending that. Like, I'm not defending me saying that, but like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, the unfortunate reality is that like the alternative that you want isn't available to you. Like, is not like, if we want, I think you would prefer like GnomeCore.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I don't know. Like, honestly, at this point, I don't even know what I want.
Well, no, I think wouldn't you like it if there was like, you know, nice, like,
yeah,
California
mixed use,
craftsmen,
yes,
like if there was like a little less of an industrial vibe, maybe more of like a natural, like urban farming
I think
vibe.
The vibe of, I mean, and this is maybe not representative of Emeryville, but the vibe of those like they feel cheaply made, like mm-hmm. new housing projects. It feels mm-hmm. like making a quick buck at the end of the world. Like, it feels weird to me to see like the juxtaposition between that. And maybe it's just I don't
what
like
do you
modern
think,
architecture.
What do you think the alternative is? Like, how would we do better?
Dude, I don't know. I mean, now we're not even talking about democracy.
We aren't, yeah.
Yeah, we should we should reroute.
Yeah, yeah, reroute.
I'm not going to win that argument. Yeah. Like, I'm asking you because I'm changing my mind on it slowly and trying to self-assess. Mm.
But so back to, I think the thing that I was talking about was like competition, right? So I don't know in this like hyper-competitive, in this world of hyper-competitive governments where they have to compete for citizens, they have to compete for tax dollars, they have to compete for business. I don't know what forms of government would arise, and I don't actually care because I don't think it's that important. I think that they would make way, way better decisions in exactly the way that restaurants make way better decisions in a competitive market without being told how to run themselves. I think you would get counties that were communes, counties that were super socialist and very like communally oriented,
yeah.
counties that did like Mad Max capitalism, counties that had these kind of building codes, counties that had these kind of building codes. I think you'd get a lot of counties that they had very lax building codes, kind of like Emeryville, and you'd get this sort of like vibrant, sort of like market-oriented development. Mm-hmm. And then also you'd have counties that would have like super strict, like full HOA, like the color of the no gnomes on your like lawn, like your it has to be manicured.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the strictly regulated, you know, shades of beige paint that you have to paint your house in. And that those would all serve different people and would all be good in different ways. But the situation we have now is like we have like about like 190 governments. What? Maybe like in the world.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Somewhere between like 190, 200. I don't really know. And the barriers for leaving one country and going to another are very, very severe. There's like language barriers, there's cultural barriers, there's financial barriers. There's, you know, just like getting visas and getting a passport and like getting citizenship barriers. And so we live in a world where there's no constraints, very few constraints on government, right? That they're, you know, it would be really hard for me to leave the United States.
Yeah.
And so what we get is we get terrible decisions. And one way that the status quo is sort of maintained is by people going like, oh, but it's democratic. And it's like, no, like if somebody votes to like cut your balls off and it was a democratic process, like that's bad regardless of, you know, the sure. voter turnout for that decision.
I do love your bit about restaurants and competitive governance. I think mm-hmm. it's very convincing. I think you could run on that political platform and be relatively successful. Mm. Not that you will, but but one issue I see with it is like, okay, let's say that you have an environmental concern that transcends mm-hmm. like county borders, yep. like wildfires in California.
Sure.
You know, we know.
Oh, I don't think that transcends county borders.
I mean, it does. If you are in the East, like Berkeley Hills versus mm-hmm. the Oakland Hills, and yep. the Oakland Hills have a totally different way of managing fires than the Berkeley Hills, mm-hmm. like that's going to bleed over into Berkeley.
I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I mean, the thing
like
well,
you
whatever,
don't you don't think that counties can make like that they can sort of like do good forestry management within the county?
I think they can,
and
but
that even if there's like fires in another county, they can manage to protect themselves more
I don't
or
know
less.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But let's say, you know, thought yep. experiment, let's say that yep. there's environmental pollution,
sure,
whatever,
yep.
you're downstream from another county,
sure. yep.
and the
yep.
county you got Mad Max capitalism
yep.
county
yep. Yep.
right upstream of yep. you, and they're just like polluting mm-hmm. the waters all over the place.
Yep.
Like, you need some higher government to deal with that. No.
So the problem with this argument is that you're really pointing out the hole in the barn door, but missing the overall barn door. And I would say that the reality is that there are vanishingly few issues that are actually of this nature.
I think environmental protection is a good example.
I agree. I agree. I would say that water pollution, air pollution, those are both issues which, right, like where essentially the costs are, like I can incur costs on other people that I don't have to face, right? Mm-hmm. That they're externalities, yeah. right?
And that I just think it's difficult
else?
To...
What else?
I mean, I think environmental is pretty
okay.
much my example
okay,
at this
but then,
point.
Where but then if you look at our governments, right? What percentage of their activities are dealing with the air and water pollution that have externalities? Probably like 1%, would you say? Maybe 1 in 1,000?
I agree with you. I just think that's the part we need to keep. And then how do you decide
okay,
that?
So then you agree that 99.9% of the government is dog shit and we should get rid of it.
Come on.
No, I think that it's totally reasonable and that there are scenarios where there are externalities. Do you know what an externality is?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, just for people who don't know, it's like when two people in a transaction, you know, make a transaction, it's beneficial to them. All transactions that people engage in voluntarily are beneficial to both parties. But then there's a third party which has to pay some cost that they're not directly party to the externality, and that mm-hmm. can make it so that actually the value of the transaction is negative.
Mm-hmm.
Like I buy a hat from you and you sell me a hat and like I pay you $1 and I get like $2 of benefit. So like I'm up $1 of benefit and you're up one actual dollar. But then like you also had to like burn down a forest.
Right. To make the hat.
To make the hat.
Yeah.
Or like pollute like some waterway. And then there's other people who are on that waterway.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think those arguments are reasonable and they're good. But actually, they are sort of the exception that proves the rule. That if you have to point to these very narrow things and be like, "Oh, we need a government for that,"
but I don't think environmental pollution is narrow. Like to me, that's like one of the most important issues of our time.
Most important things, but the government needed to regulate environmental issues, and the regulations that are needed are probably like one. I'm not even confident in like the 1 in 1,000 figure, maybe 1 in 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So like you could actually get rid of 99.99% of government and still have a body that could make rules about.
Sure. So let's say you have that government.
Yep.
You have your little Environmental Council of California or of the United States, and that's like mm-hmm. the whole government,
yep.
right? It's just yep. sort of protecting yep. whatever. Yep. And maybe there's other niche issues that fall in there that we're mm-hmm. not thinking of. But yep. let's say you have this perfectly small government that's only the mm-hmm. issues that yeah. you think need to
do. You know
what
happens the next day?
What?
Canada invades from the north with their giant military and take us over. Mexico invades from the south because they have a giant democracy that they're stealing tons of money from the people. And then America gets cut along the middle like a garter belt around a fat man's waist, and it becomes southern Canada and northern Mexico. That's the problem, is that like I think tiny governments are like really tiny governments are like unstable, and they just get like boned by their neighbors. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's say then you have a government that is all of those issues that actually matter, plus, like, I don't know, border patrol? Is that what you're arguing?
Yeah, border patrol. Like, I guess, I think the military. I think national
sure.
defense
military,
is like, yeah,
national
if you don't
defense.
Have national defense, you just get
but
invaded by a neighbor.
National defense
who does.
Rather than national offense.
That's right. Yeah. The Coast Guard is the only legitimate branch of the U.S.
So
military.
So let's say you have your Environmental Protection Council and uh-huh. the military.
Yeah.
How do you decide who becomes those figures?
Oh, well, do you want me to answer the question in an annoying way or
no,
in a not annoying way?
No, of course I don't
way?
Want you to answer the question in an annoying way.
Okay, yeah. So not annoying. Well, yeah, I think I only have an annoying answer. I guess I don't really
I'm
know.
Surprised.
I think that like we're focusing on, well, how do you do this? What's the right process?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that that's kind of the wrong question. I think the right question is what environment or what conditions would make good processes arise?
So creating incentives?
Yeah. So I would say that like for a very large government that doesn't face very much competition, that it won't be able to make very good that it won't make very good decisions about mm-hmm. this. But that if it's facing a lot of competition, that a process will arise naturally that will like make good leaders rise to the top. Because if country makes bad decisions about national defense, it'll just stop existing. And if it makes terrible environmental decisions and turns into a polluted wasteland, then everybody will leave.
You sound like an anti-capitalist right now. Like this
oh,
is
no,
what,
no. I'm saying markets for government. This is the ultimate capitalism. Markets for government.
I don't mean you sound like a literal anti-capitalist, but you sound like an anti-capitalist in the sense that like whenever I ask anti-capitalists, like, well, what is like the alternative? They're like, well, we can't even imagine what would emerge out of a non-capitalist society. And like what would emerge would be blah, blah. And it's just like, Okay, but yeah. Why don't you use your imagination and well, think, bro?
That's the thing. When I use my imagination to think about the post, like my capitalist utopia, mm-hmm. it's sort of what I said about like some places kind of look like weird suburban like HOAs and the people want to live in those places. And then there's like these kind of weird like mixed use places. And then there's like communist little places / hellholes mm-hmm. and people who want to live in those hellholes can live there. And that like it's not necessarily that it's this absolutely transformative thing. I think it actually looks a lot like we have today, but just, you know, a little bit better, you know. Okay, let's switch roles a little bit.
Okay.
So you say, okay, so you talk shit about democracy for a while, and then I'll say nice things about democracy.
Okay. All right, let's see, cuz I did have some criticisms of democracy that I wrote out assuming that we would have an actual debate rather than you just being like, fuck the government. I mean, I would say criticism of our current democracy is like, our current democracy is like fake as fuck.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean?
What are the things that you think are like the worst parts of our current democracy?
I would say the big problem, a big problem I think is that like people who run don't actually do anything that they run on.
Oh yeah, totally. You know, that's like, what I was going to say about
you run Trump. On like a propaganda campaign. I mean, Trump is a good example. You run like, on a what propaganda did Trump campaign.
Do? Like for all that people like, I don't fucking know. Like he didn't seem to do much of anything.
Yeah, he didn't do anything. Like I guess, what do you do about that in like a democratic way? You know, like, I also think like, yeah, the two-party system creates this like, it's like, lesser of two evils thing that just is like such bullshit.
Yeah. Different voting mechanisms can help with that a little bit. I think like we have like first past the post elections, but maybe ranked choice voting.
I think also like for local elections, like your vote does matter more and you can have a little bit more say over mm-hmm. like voting someone in who's not like a traditional Republican or Democrat mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Those are kind of like my, and then I think we've talked about this before, but like, just the feeling that the most that anyone can do to change the world is to vote.
Mm-hmm.
That like, I do think that has like a corrosive,
yeah.
like right. just the get out the vote kind
yeah.
of like
yeah.
propaganda.
Do you think that it's because people get too crazy about voting, or is it because they sort of get cucked and that's the only thing they think they can do and they don't do other productive things?
I think the people that are, that if they didn't do this, it would have like the most positive effect is like, I think we've gotten to this point where we hate as a collective, we hate rich people and celebrities so much that whenever they try to do something like charitable or good, mm-hmm. we instantly kind of are like, they're so out of touch or they're mm-hmm. just doing this because they want to like boost their egos or whatever, which like
sticking sure. microchips in my cereal.
Right.
Or
which
whatever.
Like maybe they are like in a lot of cases, I'm sure they are like doing it for the wrong reasons, whatever. Like mm-hmm. they're still doing, you know, they're doing something. And I think because we've created a culture where, you know, for celebrities and wealthy people to like participate philanthropically is just like difficult.
Mm.
The way to get out of that is to just try to get your supporters to vote. Like to like, that's what we expect out of someone like Taylor Swift, for example, is we're like, we're like, Taylor Swift, please tell your supporters to go vote. And like, she just posts like one Instagram post that's like, I just voted. Make sure you go out and vote. And like, people are like,
Yeah, incredible work. Right.
And like, you know, that's an example of someone that like, if she tried to use her, like her sway on something that was like more concrete or mm-hmm. just like, yeah, just like more real than just like telling people to vote, not even one way or the other, but just like get out the vote.
Right. Yeah.
Like that is just a very obvious example of something that would have like, even the tiniest positive effect would be better than what we have right now.
It's quite weird living in the Bay Area, which is, you know, overwhelmingly left leaning, and people always tell you to like vote. They're really angry if you don't vote. And it's like, well, what if I voted for Trump? Would you prefer I vote and vote for Trump or not vote? And they would, I think in reality, they would prefer that you didn't vote and didn't vote for Trump.
Right.
But they
can't tell you.
They can't tell you that.
For whoever.
Which is an interesting way that democracy is kind of like cucks us. Like they can't say that that you should do the thing that they think would lead to the better outcome,
mm-hmm.
i.e., you know, not vote and not vote for Trump, because they can't say anything bad about democracy.
Yeah, because they're like, well, it's just important that people vote, because as long as people vote, then we'll come to the right conclusion. Right. That's what people think. Yeah. It is. I mean, growing up in Pennsylvania does add a little bit of nuance to this, because like literally 40,000 voters in Pennsylvania is what decided Hillary versus Trump. Mm-hmm. So like, and Pennsylvania is such like a purple state in the sense that like it's not certain that things are going to go one way or the other in a given election. Like it does come down to like a razor thin margin for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the whole country just getting done by that purple eggplant emoji like, of Pennsylvania.
Truly, truly, like literally the fucking Rust Belt. Yeah. And I, so in that case, like, you know, I feel like there was a lot of like get out the vote kind of rhetoric growing up.
What's it like in what's the get out the vote? How is the rhetoric and the sort of climate, the political climate different here than in Pennsylvania and not like around particular issues? You know, because obviously like people here and people in Pennsylvania has different ideas about issues. What's the like, how do people feel differently about democracy in a purple state than in a very blue state?
California is weird because California is so like who cares who you vote for in California? Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel like California is kind of like I would say the big thing in Pennsylvania is you just get extra attention compared to other states, like, you know, presidential candidates come to my town to campaign, even though the town that I grew up in is like a population of like less than 100,000, you know. Bernie Sanders ate at my favorite Indian restaurant.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And actually Bill Clinton ate at the other Indian restaurant in town, which everyone knows is worse.
So oh, like, I really want some Indian food now.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
That's like what I'm going to get when I go home for Christmas is that Indian place. But anyway, so like, I would say like you get more attention as like a voter in Pennsylvania and people are fighting for your vote a lot more. Like fracking is obviously a huge thing that ends up being like a big
Fracking a big deal in Pennsylvania?
So like fracking is a huge thing that ends up like polarizing people because it's a huge industry, so obviously people want fracking, but also like lots of people have felt the negative environmental effects.
My drinking water is poison.
Really living up to your look. So it's, but that's why it's very polarizing, right? Is because like there's both very pro fracking people in Pennsylvania and obviously very anti fracking people in Pennsylvania. You know, it's you get both. And then fracking becomes this like major national issue because like Pennsylvania and states like Pennsylvania have like an extra push in terms of determining the federal policies in our country because it's a swing state.
It's an interesting observation that democracy is very weird because a lot of the time the choices are made like on the margins. They're made by the marginal voter. So you get like one group of, you have like some issue and then you get one group of voter who's like very much pro the issue. And then one group of voter that's very much anti the issue. And they're not the ones who decide it. The ones who decide it are the ones who can kind of be swayed either way.
Yeah.
And so everybody tries swaying those voters either way. And a lot of time it makes not a lot of sense that like, well, let's say you have like, you know, like cancer, you know, and then like there's a lot of people who are very pro cancer and a lot of people who are very anti-cancer, and you'd kind of think that maybe those would be the people who should decide the issue, but no, it's like the cancer ignorant wafflers who you can kind of get, and then they decide the issue. Like, that's very weird.
Yeah, well, it ends up so weird little issues end up being the thing that make certain people vote a certain way and get out. Like, I think Pennsylvania is a state where like get out the vote really does like matter for political parties, and so there's a lot of energy put into it, and it does pay off. Like Fetterman, I think, is a good example, who just won the Senate race in Pennsylvania over Dr. Oz. And like everyone in California that I talked to about this is like so shocked because I don't know if you're familiar with this race at all, but like Fetterman had a stroke back in August. Do you know what he looks like, by the way?
He just looks like an ogre. They straight up elected like Shrek.
It's
like
so awesome.
With a big goiter or something.
Yeah, and he's got like a tiny Latino wife.
It's so dope. Oh man, I bet he just rails her.
Yeah, he's got a really awesome vibe, honestly. But so Fetterman like had a stroke in August, and he's just like clearly not like at the state that he needs he needed to be at for like November elections.
Yeah.
They put him out on the debate stage. He did badly. Everyone know, like Fetterman supporters knew he did badly. Yeah. Like everyone was upset with like that performance, and it was this very like, oh, what's going to happen? Who's going to win? Fetterman won, and like everyone that I talked to in California was so shocked by this because they were like, how could they vote for this like brain dead ogre, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but yeah.
Fetterman is someone that I've known for years because he's been basically trying to campaign to win elections for like 10 plus years now. And like he goes literally door to door in Pennsylvania, like everywhere. Like he is the definition of get out the vote campaigning where like he didn't from like August to November because he was recovering from a stroke. But before August, literally like the 10 years leading up to that election was like him constantly running for like he was mayor of a town. And then I think he ran for like Congress or he ran for some state position that he didn't end up getting. And then finally for Senate. And like the reason why he was able to build up to Senate and win is because like he literally went to every fucking town in every in Pennsylvania and showed his face and met people and got out the vote.
Yeah.
And I also think his like vibe is very Pennsylvania. Like he's just like an ogre that wears like a hoodie and shows like he's he's got like the Trump quality to him of just like the casual outsider appeal.
Right. Interesting that he's been has that appeal and he's been in politics for
He's not successfully been in politics.
Oh yeah, but he has been. I guess that's why he has an outsider appeal. Even though he's been trying to get out the vote for 10 years, it hasn't worked.
It hasn't worked.
Yeah,
he was mayor of a like small town in western Pennsylvania, but mostly he's just like a guy. Like, and people feel that from him. And like when you go and you talk to people, I don't know. Yeah, I don't even know what I'm like arguing at this point, really. But like, I think I don't know. Like, I guess my initial point was that like the get out the vote shit is stupid and pointless. However, I will say like, I didn't feel that way until coming to California.
Right.
Like I definitely felt in Pennsylvania, like, no, like putting in effort to not just get out the vote, but to get people to vote for whoever you wanted, like actually did make a huge difference there.
Right. Yep.
But that's not really democracy, is it? Like, that's just like some weird, stupid game where like for whatever reason, 40,000 people in Pennsylvania mean more than millions of people in California.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
like
yeah,
that's not democracy either, right? That's the Electoral College, which is just like, I don't even know, what do you call that, representative democracy or?
Yeah, yeah. The Electoral College is very weird.
Yeah.
The Electoral College is extremely weird.
But that's like the way that we came up with like mediating tyranny of the majority, right?
Yeah. It's another way that we came up with mediating tyranny of the majority that I don't think people really understand is the fact that what is it that Congress seats are given based on population size? It's like the more people you have, the more seats you have in Congress. Whereas there's two senators for every state.
Yeah.
And then people get really upset about this. They're like, well, why does, you know, like Wyoming get two senators and they kind of get equal say in this one chamber of the house? And I think people don't understand that that's part of why the states are willing to be in the union at all. That if you were like, okay, you're a tiny state and you can be in the union, but you're basically going to have zero voice. And, you know, it's just going to be decided by people in California, New York, and that's it. The state would be like, okay, but okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to enter into that agreement. But if you're like, okay, well, we're going to have two houses, lower house is going to be, you know, determined by the number of people, and the upper house, you're going to get two seats and you're going to get the same number of seats as every other state. Then that isn't that. Then that is a deal. Then okay, like okay, yeah, I can see that. Like then I will have some amount of like veto power. I can protect my own interests. But people don't really understand that, and they're like, oh yeah, no, Wyoming should just be willing to get ass fucked hard by the rest of the country.
Yeah.
On the reg.
I mean, obviously, I think that's the best option. You know, like this balance between like the Senate and the House for population, I think makes sense. I do think that the president should be a popularity contest. If we're going to have some guy that leads the whole show and is like our mascot, essentially, like it should be a popularity contest. It shouldn't be like an electoral college thing.
Yeah,
you know? Right.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to elect a mascot, like,
which is essentially
give the people
what it
a
is.
Mascot that they, yeah, it is. Absolutely. It's a human mascot.
Like
the president is the American populace's fursona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Trump was the right man for the job.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like it's, yeah. I actually have a different example that I wanted your thoughts on in terms of democracy. Elon taking over Twitter. Right? So obviously Elon's currently like mostly running Twitter like a dictator where he's absolutely. Like,
and he recently, did you see, he banned posting links to other social media sites, which
so
is
silly.
Insane.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
I do think that's going to be walked back, but
I agree.
You know, he's essentially like running Twitter like a dictator, except there are certain things that he gets pushback on and he's like, all right, poll, Like, uh-huh. should I bring Trump back to Twitter?
Uh-huh.
And then people vote on the poll. And then he's like, okay, unbanning Trump.
Uh-huh.
The most recent one was, you know, people were mad at him for banning the flight tracker, the Elon flight tracker account.
Yeah.
And he posted and was like, should I unban the Elon flight tracker? And people said yes. And he was like, okay, we'll unban.
Interesting. Yeah.
In that case, democracy is like the only good thing about, like, so far about Elon taking over Twitter, in the sense that, like, Elon has basically just been like running it like a shit show.
Uh-huh.
But then, like, he uses these like Twitter polls to basically check him. And then he's like, all right. And maybe that's equivalent to just like flipping a coin or something. And like, so as a result, that just ends up being statistically like 50% possibility of it being better than what Elon would have done anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I do think, like, do you think that that is, if you think about Twitter as being like a government in a sense, because it is sort of like, it's the public square. It is kind of, it's a company, but it's something else that I think we haven't like really figured out how to manage.
Mm-hmm.
If Elon is running it like a dictator, except for these like key issues that he then lets people vote on, and then he then like goes with that because it's a public election, and it would make him look bad if he didn't do the thing that he set the poll for, it like, is that democracy? Like,
No, that's like, you, for example, in restaurants in the Bay Area, my, you know, capitalist utopia.
Yeah.
I think that restaurant owners care a lot about what customers think and what customers want.
Sure.
And they pay attention to it a lot because they're incentivized to.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it in more or less effective ways. They might look at what people buy, and sometimes, like Elon, they might ask people and try to get their feedback.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, Twitter being run by Elon, who asks people's opinions every once in a while, that's kind of like the good model, right? Where you have somebody who has like control, but they're under constraints because people can go to other social media.
Yeah.
Twitter doesn't have a monopoly on like websites that people go to visit to like waste time on the internet. That's what they are. And so then the autocrat is forced to, you know, take the voice of the people into account when it makes sense.
Right. Of course. I mean, just the fact that he's making a poll is not a democratic decision.
Right. Yeah.
But I think it's kind of interesting, this like weird like internet poll version of democracy like he's like sort of implementing
people love
here
it.
And there.
I love the polls.
I love clicking yes or no.
I love clicking yes or no. Doesn't matter which one I click. I feel good.
Is there anything else we should definitely get to?
Well, now I have to say nice things about democracy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I actually think that the fact that democracy strikes people as fair gives democracy a lot of stability.
Yeah.
We've sort of seen democracy kind of wash over the world, and a lot of places have become democracies or in the process of becoming more democratic. And one, I think that's good for stability. I think the worst kind of government is probably an unstable government. That's like very chaotic and it's changing all the time.
Right.
Like, for example, one of the reasons that the Iraq war was like probably bad was not because Saddam's dictatorship was particularly good, but that throwing the country into chaos was much, much worse.
Of course. That's the lesson of American imperialism.
Yeah. And so I think that stability and continuity that democracy provides is probably incredibly important and incredibly beneficial.
I will say, okay, I think you can have that. You can have that illusion and create a similar sense of stability. Like, for example, I mean, Elon is maybe not a good example because everyone's so like pissed at him and he's not really doing that great of a job.
Mm-hmm.
But like FDR served 4 terms as president. Mm-hmm. His family was like very integrated into like the American political system. He essentially ruled the US as like a monarch during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like a stressful time, and he did more than most presidents have the power to do.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is just, it was wartime. It was the Depression. There was just a lot of like instability that allowed him to kind of take power. And as I said, his family was like very well connected, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
But he believed very deeply in the idea that he could get the American people to understand why he was making the decisions that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very important to him. And so he did the fireside chats, right? Like, he didn't have to do that.
What were the form of the fireside chats? Were they on radio?
It was radio. Yeah. Okay, so not quite weekly, but like sort of weekly.
Uh-huh.
He would basically just like go on.
Really,
and
not as consistent as the Hell Money podcast.
Not nearly as consistent as the Hell Money
podcast. Yeah. FDR did not have that Sigma male grind set that we do.
We really do. But the fireside chats was essentially like to, even though he was basically ruling as a monarch, people felt very much a part of the political process in a way that I think felt fair to them, or they felt like, okay, I understand why he's doing this. They also would do polls to try to see, like, when he gave a fireside chat, they'd poll households and see, like, did people understand it? What are they still concerned about? And then he would, like, adjust his messaging and try to, like, he really, and this is naive, I think, in some ways, but, like, it's also admirable and beautiful in other ways. He really believed that, like, he could get the American people to understand why he did things and understand, like, complicated political, especially geopolitical things related to World War II.
Right.
And, like, I think that's an example of, like, you know, you said democracy is stabilizing and that perhaps makes it the better, the best form of government just because it's stable. I think you can have the illusion of fairness and stability without literally having democracy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I think you have to have, like, it takes, like, a, it takes the right leader, you know, it takes the right, like, kind of, like, I don't know, like,
I do think that, like, one thing that gives people, like, that, that people, you, if you have a leader, it gives people this, like, focal point that kind of, I think, in some sense, like, prevents revolution a little bit. Because if your leader is weak, then unpopular, another leader can displace that leader.
Yeah.
And in democracy, we just have elections and then the leader gets displaced bloodlessly. But in another form of government, under other forms of government, you get coups, you get revolution, and that's quite bloody and unstable.
Can you have a decentralized, leaderless, stable, like, situation?
Yeah, very good question. I think the answer is it's unknown.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I agree.
We haven't really seen it. It seems tricky because if you sort of have a power vacuum, then someone or something steps into that power vacuum. And if you have, if you don't have a power vacuum, then, you know, somebody with a lot of power will sort of displace people that have less power. Yeah, I think it's very much uncertain. I don't know, because not only, like, not only do you want something that's good, you also want something that's stable, obviously.
Yeah.
You don't want a good system that falls apart immediately because it's unstable.
Benevolent dictator.
Benevolent dictatorship, decentralized, like, ANCAP utopia.
Yeah.
Or even a, you know, communist utopia where briefly, you know, the government, you know, is very, very effectively making this allocation decisions. Mm-hmm. But then the next day turns corrupt. Like, you don't want any of those things.
Yeah.
And I think it's a big unknown, you know, what is possible? Like, what, where in the space of trade-offs can we land that's both good and stable?
Yeah, I know I just made fun of, like, anti-capitalists and then you as an anti-democracy person for just being like, well, I don't know, like, we have to imagine something better. Not that I can do that. Yep. But, like, I do kind of feel that way about decentralized systems in general. Like, we might not be able to conceive of what that looks like, but I do think that's ideally where we'd like to head.
I think we can get there in a piecemeal fashion. So, for example, you know, Bitcoin
taking money out of the equation.
Yeah, Bitcoin gives people the ability to individually just say, hey, you wanted to put this thing within the scope of government and make it a thing that's governed. In this case, you know, money, savings, to some extent, taxing, issuing debt, and individuals can just reject that and say, you know, that I can avoid government by using Bitcoin privately. And that means that however much government wants to govern these things, they just no longer have the ability to. And that gets us a little bit further to this, like, decentralized world.
Figure out different parts of it as we go, basically, and slowly but surely take away even the ability to amass power in the way that government has been able to.
Like, for example, you know, now, you know, digital electronic communication between people, private communication between people, publishing, all these things are very cheap, very accessible. And so now that the government simply isn't able to regulate it, you know, you know, what you published in a newspaper is far more regulated than what you can put on a blog post, just practically, because people can do it so cheaply. Private digital messages between people is completely outside of the scope of government because, you know, you can just sign up for Signal or any number of private encrypted messengers and do what you want. And Obama, a very popular president, was in favor of cryptographic backdoors and platforms like Signal, and that went absolutely nowhere. I think partially because of, you know, the protections, partially because it's unpopular, and it just didn't matter that he wanted it.
I didn't even know he wanted that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every president has wanted that. That's been a, yeah, every president, like, it's the people in power, they want to expand the scope of their power, mm-hmm. and they expand the scope of their power by bringing more and more things into the pile of that which is governed by governments.
Sure.
And so private communications, yeah, they want that. They, you know, they have all sorts of great reasons. They want to prevent people from saying naughty things, or, you know, trafficking other people, or, you know, plotting, you know, terrorist attacks or whatever. Which I think are not, those are obviously like concerns, but like they're not the majority. Like the preponderance of the benefit comes from letting people, you know, do whatever the fuck they want. So yeah, they've always been in power of putting backdoors on communications and cryptography.
I kind of like Obama again, just FYI.
Oh sure, yeah, no problem.
I don't know what happened, but
didn't you always have liked Obama?
I have complicated feelings.
Yeah.
I
find Obama very charming.
He's so charming. He's
so charming.
He's very good looking. Yeah. He's a good husband. Mm-hmm. We really, you know, he was one in a million. Mm. I don't know how I'm into Obama and also in my Atlas Shrugged era, but I've managed it. I'm an empty vessel.
Well, I mean, in a way, Obama he kind of represents, he's a rugged individualist.
He
right?
is.
He's the leader of a democracy, but the leaders of democracies
You're
are
right.
always
he,
rugged individualists.
He is like the exceptional individual. Mm, excellent yeah. mascot for America.
Yep.
Glad that he won the popularity contest. Yep, he yep. deserved it.
Yep.
You know, yep. he's an American idol.
Yep. So final, I guess the final point I'll make
okay.
is in my pro democracy sort of goings on is that lobbying is good.
Lobbying is not good.
Lobbying is good. So the reason that lobbying is good is because most of the time in a democracy, people make terrible decisions at random because they have no stake in the outcome. And it's good that there are channels through which people who have a stake in the outcome can express that stake in the outcome so that they just don't get shafted.
Don't you think that lobbying just sort of accelerates fiat though? Like as long as like the government has control over money, you can lobby to just like get yourself closer and closer to.
That's right. Not all lobbying is good, right? Some lobbying
not
is.
Not all lobbying.
Not
Hashtag
all lobbying.
Not all lobbyists. All lobbying.
Yeah. Not all lobbyists. Not all lobbying is good. So like, for example, when they're just trying to get zero sum concessions out of the government, that's bad, right? When you know, regulated financial entities are just trying to, you know, suck more money out of the teat of the government at everybody's expense, that's bad. But when legitimate business interests would benefit from better regulation, and when them lobbying means that they are able to hire more people, produce more goods, everybody gets things cheaper and better, right? That lobbying actually leaves us better off, right? Like a lot of business owners are just like lobbying to simply not be screwed over by the government. And we benefit, like, right? We want an economy that like works. Right, we want an economy that like employs us and produces stuff for us, right? And the government and some businesses lobbying the government so that they can do their business better benefits us by the economy being better off through jobs, lower prices, everything. And
you,
it's good.
You should really give that pep talk to slimy ass politicians that just take so much lobbyist money. And
ooh,
have,
yeah, maybe I could get them to take more lobbyist
you
money.
You could
be and
like a
be
life
even
coach
more
for them
off.
And really help them like yeah. absolve them of their. Disgusting.
I should go on like UC Berkeley campus with this in my current appearance and mm-hmm. You know, tell the kids
preach the good word
about lobbying. Yeah.
I could not disagree more with you, but you know, that's what the podcast is all about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I you know, I appreciate your candor. Freedom of speech. I respect your right to say it.
Mm. Yeah.
Should we end it there?
Yeah, let's call it.
Last episode of the year.
I feel like it's been a big year. We've both turned into, you know, major internet micro celebrities with
major.
This, maybe we're still like pico celebrities or like nano. Maybe we've gone from pico celebrities to nano celebrities.
Could be crazy. Yeah.
Getting crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we met this year.
That's
no,
right.
Actually, technically, we might have met in 2021. We might have met
December. I think we met this year. I think we met like in the beginning of the year. We only knew each other for like a few months, right?
Yeah.
Like we barely knew each other when you were like, hey, are you going to Bitcoin 20?
Oh, I like didn't know you. Like yeah. for real when we yeah. I mean, the pod was sort of a risk. It was just kind of
Whatever.
I remember like interviewing, not actually interviewing you, but like asking you lots of questions about yourself early on in our friendship.
Because
was like, I need to know if guy is like a fucking psycho. Before
I'm glad I passed to the test.
Yeah, you did, because you're very honest. Anyway, whatever. but yeah, crazy year. We met, started the pod.
Uh-huh, yeah.
2022 is the best year of my life so far. I made a lot of friends. I started a lot of fun creative endeavors. I feel like I really came to terms with like my angst about things. Like, mm-hmm. I have much more of a sense of humor about like clown world or like the way things are going. Like, I feel like I'm able to weather the storm with a lot more levity, which feels good. And yeah, I'm excited for 2023.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think the next run up for Bitcoin is going to be pretty crazy. Like, yeah. I think it's going to be like, we've had like, you know, these waves of adoption. The next one is going to be kind of nutty. Like, when we see like, you know, like $200,000 a coin and like big, big, big entities are getting into it.
Yeah.
And also with the interesting tech that's been happening, like interesting developments in Bitcoin. For example, the ordinal on-chain.
Right.
Full. I mean,
how have you gone this long in an episode not mentioned?
It's true. Yeah. But we just released ordinal inscriptions, which are my version of Bitcoin native NFTs. No sidechain, no token, all content entirely on chain. They're the best NFTs that anybody has ever seen.
The best
NFTs. The best NFTs. The Ethereans, they're making their own NFTs, but they're not sending their best.
No.
You know? So really excited about that. Really excited about all the creative stuff that's happening on Bitcoin. And I think that's going to continue to accelerate. I kind of feel like, I don't know when it started, but I feel like there's a new crop of like Bitcoin developers who were just interested in doing like really cool, really exciting stuff. And so I just see a lot of that. I think part of that is Lightning, because I think Lightning is fun. Like, Lightning is like, oh, I can make a payment that sends like a penny across the world. Mm-hmm. And then naturally creative people think about like, oh, what are all the kinds of things that I could do with that? And then you get people who like maybe aren't as excited by the Bitcoin digital gold thing. You know, they probably like it, but it doesn't get them out of the bed in the morning, doesn't get them like writing code. But like, oh, look at this tool that I can do with things with. That does get them writing code and doing awesome stuff.
Yeah, the tech astronaut types can be more like have a little bit more of a home in Bitcoin with that.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, you can put whatever PNG on the blockchain now with ordinals.
That's right. You can. So yeah.
The possibilities are endless.
I published the first mainnet ordinal inscription.
Congratulations.
Just this nice little pixel art skull. And then the second mainnet inscription was made by a user, and it's a dick butt. So yeah,
you have to let the free market do what it's gonna
do. Gotta let the market decides what's good. Yeah, that dick butt is in the most replicated, most secure data storage on planet Earth, the Bitcoin time chain, and it's going to be there until the heat death of the universe.
I can't wait until like 10 years from now when like the skull is worth like some amount, but then the dick butt is like
I'm gonna neck myself if the dick butt fetches more on the market
than the first ordinal. Yeah,
that's really going to be, you know, me, the capitalist, getting cucked by the markets.
Truly, yeah. It would be an ironic fate for you.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up. Yep. We're done here. Yep. Yeah, I actually do want Indian food now. So, yeah, let's get out of here. But yeah, thank you to the listeners.
Yep. Thanks everybody. We love for
the
listening. Comments.
We love the boosts.
Yeah, we love you guys.
We love you guys.
We'd be nothing without.
We'd be nothing.
Yeah, our listeners and our friends who also listen to the pod.
Yeah. All right.
Cool.
See you next year.
Bye, everybody.